You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found on the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we are welcoming slash preparing to learn from Tony Trapp of Tony Trapp Remodeling. Tony Trapp, how are you doing today?
Great, James. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Thanks for being on here. Tony is tolerating me as a new guy working the system here. But I tell you, Tony's got a lot to tell us about being an awesome business owner, specifically in the construction industry. So let's start there. Tony, you're a successful guy. You've been around for a long time, and you're growing a business with employees and having fun doing it, it sounds like. But I see a lot of guys that are just on their own. They're independent, and they're swinging their hammers, and they're old and decrepit and probably destroying their backs in the process. What's your secret?
Well, I was young and not decrepit and swinging it by myself for a while, James. But
That's how it starts, right?
Yeah, that's how it starts. I mean, typically, that's the story of a lot of folks. Usually in remodeling, people aren't planning to go into remodeling.
Sure.
So I specialize in residential remodeling, which is different than like new construction.
Sure.
Or commercial construction.
Okay.
And I go into people's homes and we'll renovate like kitchens or bathrooms, or things of that, put an addition on.
Sure.
So our focus, part of our business is the nuts and bolts of things, and the other part is really dealing with people on the consumer side and the production side.
Sure.
And how did I get there? It was totally by accident. Kind of an interesting story I can get into, but
sure.
It wasn't planned for a couple of years. And then I said, okay, I really like this. I could get into this. I could see that this could be a direction to go. And then I got some help along the way, a lot of help.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been working slowly, but surely.
Nice.
So, yeah.
So how long have you been doing this?
So it's been about 17 years.
Holy cow.
Yep.
That's forever. That's forever in most businesses anyways.
It goes quick, but some days it seems longer. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I was just watching a video on the success, quote unquote, of Amazon and how long they've been around. I think that's right around their time, or just maybe a little shy of.
Yeah. So they're multiples different trajectory than me.
You could argue that you're more profitable in many years.
Maybe. So. I don't know. It's just different.
You know,
it's maybe he's happier, I don't know, than me or not.
You could argue all probably of, both directions
yeah,
on that one.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So how did you get started? 17 years ago, you're just like, construction business, let's do it.
Right. No, not quite. So as one does when they're going to school for computer science or electrical engineering, I was looking to do an internship.
Sure.
I got a long internship, like 8 months with IBM in Rochester, Minnesota.
Okay.
And it was great. You know, I felt very privileged to be able to have that. And IBM taught me a lot. And the most valuable thing I found out was I absolutely did not want to do that. I was at that time, you know, just working for profits behind a computer.
Sure.
With such a huge organization. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do after that internship. I said, you know, I'm going to hit the pause button to find out, am I going to complete school and go to work for IBM or another company like that?
Sure.
So I took some time off and I ended up working at what used to be the Canterbury in Madison. It was a bed and breakfast.
Oh, wow. That's a shift.
I just needed a summer job, just something where I kind of figured it out because the student loans had kicked in while I was at school.
That's always great.
That was great. I was like, hey, wait, I'm working for school, but I have to pay back student loans. This is getting expensive really quick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the reason I hit the pause button is I knew if I went back to school, I could get a degree.
Sure.
But the things I had earned credits for, if I took another couple of semesters, were going to be not make sense for, I would have to continue more schooling to get higher degrees. I wouldn't be able to go an employment job right away. So part of it was money. So I got this kind of just summer gig.
Yeah.
That turned into, I worked there about a year, and I would do everything from check people in to serve them wine and cheese to clean the rooms, you know, plunge the toilet. And they're like, you're pretty good at plunging toilets, Tony Trapp, and fixing other things.
Sure.
And up until that time, I'd just been doing repair stuff for food, like on the weekends. It was a fun thing.
Okay.
I wasn't much of a cook, so people would invite me over. you know, cook me some food. I'd tune up their door or whatever. It was kind of fun to do.
Oh, not so like you would fix something within their house, just whatever.
Just
some
a quick
little
handyman type project.
All right.
You know, and I didn't know any better. I just done this my whole life. I grew up in a farm, and we always fix things. And
all right.
And then the bookkeeper at the Canterbury, Virginia Evangelist, said, "Hey, Tony, you know, you could turn this into a career."
Yeah.
My dad was a contractor. I could help you get going. And so that's the one that really planted the seed. And I said, okay. And so the Canterbury was my first client.
Sure.
I switched from, you know, being the innkeeper to being their maintenance person.
Wow.
And Virginia helped me with some couple clients. And it was a rough couple of years. I think I grossed less than $20,000 in 2 years or something.
All right.
But I was, you know, just out of college living very frugally.
Sure.
One cordless drill and an efficiency apartment and Toyota Corolla sedan. And
so you're cruising around this Toyota Corolla with your drill fixing.
I didn't even have a roof rack yet or a power saw. I had a handsaw.
Whoa.
And a cordless drill. That was my only. So I just kept working because it was like I really like tools.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, I'll do this. I'll buy some neat tools. I'll learn some things.
Sure.
It was a bookstore beneath the Canterbury, so I was able to stock up on my self-educated on a lot of books on how to fix and repair and build things.
Sure. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, the barrier to entering the industry is pretty low. It's changed a little bit now.
Sure. Just with licensing or what's the barrier
all,
now?
All of the above. I mean, you didn't even need a contractor's license to get a permit. You just needed a thing that said you had so much insurance.
Oh.
So as long as you were able to have a minimum insurance level, you could get a quote-unquote contractor's license. There was no education requirement, and that's it's changed. And
okay.
A lot of the building science and how we build things has changed dramatically for the better.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's kind of how it happened to start with.
Sure. So you had no anticipation or idea that it was going to actually turn into a business of the scale.
When I first started the first like 1 or 2 years, it was just like, hey, I'm going to do this to earn some money while I kind of think about what my next move is. You know, am I going to go back to school? Am I going to change majors?
Sure.
And then I thought, you know, after a couple of years in, I'm like, I really enjoy this work I'm doing. I enjoy my customers.
Mm-hmm.
I like the challenges. And Virginia's like, why don't you just keep going and you can decide how far you want to take it. If you want to just be that guy that's, you know, working solo and picking the right projects or hire additional employees and that sort of thing. So part of what drove it more was I kept getting more and more customers because I didn't know my business very well and was way undercharging.
Common problem, right?
Common problem, very common problem. And so my customers were growing. I'm like, I need to be able to take care of these people. I need to hire some more employees.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was working super hard and hiring employees and trying to train them and take care of customers. And I thought, this is crazy. I'm not making any money. I don't have any retirement or anything like that.
Sure.
So then just kept going along and then said, there's got to be a better way.
Mm-hmm.
I think I joined a local trade organization, which was a stretch for me at the time because I wasn't charging enough to have a lot of money.
Sure.
And I looked around. I'm like, hey, wait, these people take vacation.
Sure.
They have like, you know, second homes and things like that.
Right.
Someone even had like their own airplane, which I thought was, this is ridiculous. How can they afford to do this?
Sure.
Because
you're essentially doing the same work.
I was like, I'm doing similar work than you're doing. Something's got to be different. And I feel like I'm being pretty professional.
Right.
Must be a better way to do this. And so that was showed me that, hey, there's a way you can do this in business. And then I started finding people that could help me get to there. And that's been over a series of years. I mean, that's continual education and a lot of trial and error. So
okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And the big struggle was, you know, being able to find the right team members.
Sure.
Especially when I switched from swinging the hammer to just selling or managing.
Sure.
That was a big switch. I stopped in 2009. So what is that, like 7 years?
Sure.
I was out in the field full time and selling and managing full time and doing all the vehicle repairs too.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a rusty fleet.
That's awesome.
And quite a lot of attention.
Sure. Well, you got to start somewhere, right?
Right, right, right.
So how many years were you in when you got your first employee then?
Geez, James, that must have been year
just
two,
ballpark.
Two or three.
Okay, we won't double check, but
something like that, yeah.
And you still had the Corolla.
Yep. And then I had to expand. So the employee needed to drive something. I said, yeah. I'm going to provide a vehicle and the equipment.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden I got first employee and then I got equipment and vehicle.
Okay.
Yep.
Did that employee work out?
First employee, Alex, did not work out. That was a learning curve.
Okay, sure.
Second employee was Daryl. And Daryl stayed with us for quite a long time.
Okay.
Daryl was a dance instructor and had worked at a local tech company.
Holy cow.
For a long time, and he had a degree. So we had similar, varied backgrounds. We connected at a client's house. I said, you seem to have a successful dance business. He's like, I need something to do during the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we found a fit and just worked together for quite a while. And he was kind of fine with a scrappy startup and, you know, going for our level of quality and interest in learning things. And so it was a good fit for quite a while.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So have employees been a challenge at all from a hiring and firing, all that kind of stuff?
Definitely. It's always a challenge. Okay. I mean, now more so than ever because there's less employees to hire.
Well, the market's pretty dry in that regard.
Very dry. So we've been doing some creative things to try to find people from other areas and provide a path to this industry.
Other areas of professionalism or
absolutely
local location?
Both. Yep. Okay. Yep. And even recruiting in, you know, schools before they graduate, like middle school, high school. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's a nationwide problem in the trades right now.
Sure.
I mean, that was definitely a struggle going through the Great Recession. But we were able to pick up some really good employees because we were growing through that period. Mm-hmm. And some really skilled people that were getting dropped from some other places.
Sure.
Or weren't able to find enough work. And so they've stuck with us.
Gotcha.
Yep.
You know, it's interesting. I had a little brother through Big Brothers Big Sisters.
Yep.
A year or two in, we had this project where we were going to make this birdhouse. And I was under the impression that everybody knew how to work a saw and a drill. Mm-mm. Just like that's the default. That's what you learn when you're a kid and through school, through shop class and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Not that you're going to go out and build a house, but that you're aware that the drill, when you pull the trigger, it's going the right direction to drill the hole. You put the drill bit in there, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
He had no idea.
Right.
He couldn't even point to the drill.
Right.
And this first, you hear that record scratch in your head, like, wait, what? What did you just say? So we brought out a table saw, and I'm thinking, you know, I got to send you back home with all of your fingers. And so I was trying to just put the fear of God in him for not cutting his finger off.
You don't want
to
do that.
Because I told him, hey, you know, that table saw is not going to apologize if it takes your finger, right? It's not going to send you a note. It's not going to give your finger back. It's not even going to tape the finger. So just avoid that saw, right? And so I apparently put in too much fear. And so when he was moving the board and the little chunk of wood that he was cutting off was past the saw, he let go of it.
Oh, no.
And so the saw blade sent that piece of wood right past his head and down the driveway. And I never even didn't even know that could happen. I don't know, my dad taught me whatever.
Sure.
So I was like, oh my gosh, I was worried about your fingers and I almost cost you your head.
Right.
And so it's so funny.
Oh no.
Because this 12-13-year-old kid, that they don't teach that stuff like they used to. And I say they as like society, not necessarily blaming anyone.
It's changed a little bit in the area. There's been more shop classes or tech ed. There's different things they call it now.
Okay.
So there's some more opportunities because there's definitely demand and industries helping push that.
Yeah.
But it's true that not as many people have that opportunity. And let's say if you're in a situation where maybe you don't have a garage or you don't have access to that equipment, you're going to have super limited exposure, and it's way different watching something on a video.
Sure. Night and day.
But there's definitely some folks that are really into making their own things and doing things by hand. And so that's great, but definitely being safe. And so we've recognized that, and we've worked on building a safety program.
Okay.
Even in a smaller company like ours, really focusing on that, making it a priority.
Sure.
Because if we're going to try to get younger people into the industry, we want to make sure that we make it as safe as possible and they can stay in it as long as possible.
Sure.
Because there's definitely dangers to it.
Right. I mean,
power tools, you can just make accidents faster.
Sure.
And whether it sets the material on your body, it's true.
Right.
So you got to definitely be aware of those dangers there.
Sure.
Yep.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you about specifically in regards to employees is there's a lot of people that I see, like a guy, a van and a hammer kind of thing.
Yep, chucking a truck.
So chucking a truck. So a lot of the people that you're looking for are skilled people that possibly could or maybe believe that they could go off in something like that. Has that been a challenge to to bring people on as employees that are trained in the construction industry versus them going off on their own to swing hammers on their own?
So that's a very individual thing. For some people, it can be. They're just very used to doing things their own way, and they don't want to adjust. And some of those folks are not a good fit to being employees, and usually you can help identify that early enough now.
Sure.
Where other people, they really need that support. And let's say folks that just want to work, you know, a solid 40 hours a week, they really enjoy being in the field and they don't want to worry about selling and all the bookkeeping.
Sure.
Those folks tend to be a better fit. If someone's looking for a very unique schedule or having just random time off where it's not as consistent, then, you know, being that individual owner operator.
Gotcha.
You know, where they don't have as a higher desire for a very planned salary, that might be fine.
Sure.
For them.
Sure. You That's know, fair.
Or it depends on your customer base too, who you're serving.
So sure.
Ours are want a more professional, where you can have a planned experience.
Okay.
You know, it's more predictable. Predictable experience is the word I'm looking for.
With customer interaction
with our company and our employees, yeah. So we like to have a very defined timeline for when the project's going to start,
stick to it,
and that the project's going to take so much time. So if all of a sudden the employee says, oh, I'm taking off for a couple of weeks to go on a trip with family that just came up, I'll come back later. We don't want to be part of that story.
Sure. So that is so interesting that you point that out in regards to the customer experience.
Yeah.
Because that is what I feel is one of your main differentiators.
Yeah.
Because I've dealt with a lot of construction companies, both with Calls on Call and with just being part of NARI. And the majority of them are not in the boat that you're in or don't even care, let alone have awareness of the customer experience. So can you talk about that a little
bit? Yeah. So we definitely care about that. So we're just trying to set expectations at every point. And so whether that's how quickly we'll get back to you with an estimate, or when's the job going to start, or how much it's going to cost. If we can set those expectations and talk about it, then you have the operator say, nope, no thanks, this doesn't fit for me for price or timeline.
Sure.
Rather than, I've invested a lot of time and energy in you, and now you've disappointed me.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least say, hey, here, this is coming up, and here's the options of how we can manage it.
Sure.
And so that seems to be better success for us, and it's more professional, and that's... we attract employees that have those same values. So, I mean, our goal is to have a professional experience at every step in the process.
And sure.
We're not perfect by any means.
No but, company is. I mean,
we're trying to do our best every day.
Sure.
And take care of people.
Yeah, well, that's fair. But just the fact that you are even aware that there is a customer experience,
sure.
I think you're light years ahead of most of your competition.
Yeah, I mean, everyone comes in at different points. And since the barrier to enter the industry is relatively low, you get lots of different people here, so
sure.
Yeah, not everybody has training or the same values, so
right. Yeah, it's interesting. I just come across business that think, oh, you're lucky that I showed up today to do your bathroom remodel or something like that, and people are like, I've been showering in the sink for the past 2 months because you haven't been here for the past month and a half.
Yeah, bathrooms and kitchens can be pretty intense for the homeowner because it will take away your sink or your faucet or your bathroom, and we're going to move a small factory into your house and charge you a lot of money.
Right.
And so that can be pretty upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, during some of that, some people show up at not exact times.
Right.
So there's certain things we can control and not control. So
sure.
Depending on the individual and their expectations, we try to have that conversation ahead of time to set those. Yeah, to figure out. Everyone's a little different about what they care or don't care the most about. Yeah,
that's fair. Has it been challenging to work with subcontractors to keep them on your timeline?
Yeah, absolutely. Because they're having the same problems we are with labor.
Sure.
So our projects have extended, and we're just trying to set those expectations earlier in the process.
Sure.
Yeah, because they have challenges like everyone else. Mm-hmm. But we've definitely been able to find some really good trained partners in the Madison area that are professional and have good people on their teams.
Okay.
And we typically tend to work with the same people.
Mm-hmm.
So they know each other and work better together and can communicate better.
Gotcha.
And we can have a more predictable process.
And I imagine they know how you work and your expectations.
Yeah, generally. Yep.
So if they want more work from you, they have to heed to those to a point.
Yeah. I mean, we came up with a kind of in-house, subcontractor trade partner scoring matrix
Oh, you know, nice.
Yeah. Well, just other things to look at, not just price, not just quality. You know, it's how quickly do they respond if there's a problem.
Sure.
You know, how do they deal with their waste and a bunch of other factors. How long has our relationship been with them?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can weight those at different ways and then score them differently.
Sure.
We are having some things where our certain of our lead carpenters or team members are saying, hey, this is super valuable to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then we have other issues like on the billing side that they may not see that are also valuable if they don't have certain business things, if they're using their social security number rather than a tax ID number.
Sure.
Or if they're, you know, not an LLC, depending on making sure they have the right insurance. So there's certain no-goes where they just can't, we can't subcontract them if they don't have certain things in place.
Sure.
Yep.
That's fair. That's awesome. I like it.
Yep.
That is clever, and I can see that's how you're above and beyond.
Well, it's a way our team can be like, okay, you know, this one person I really like for this one area, but then they have all these other areas that they don't exceed or they need improvement. And we can, if they want to be a team member, we're like, hey, here's what we'll need from you. We can talk to them.
Sure.
Yep. But I mean, it's sometimes it doesn't work out or businesses change and we have to adjust, but we definitely try to honor folks that have been, good to us and we've been good to them.
Sure.
Yep.
One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about specifically was 2008, that whole financial rocky road for a lot of construction companies or a lot of companies, realistically. You started out 2002 ish.
Yep.
Something like that.
It was rocking and rolling.
You had, at least a foot in the ground when the market had a rough time.
Yep.
So how did that affect your business?
We grew through the recession. So we were a little unique. During the early 2000s, most people were doing new construction, really heavily focused on that. So I had to do very little advertising to do repair type business.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I had a website. And back then, that was rare in the construction industry.
Sure.
I mean, it was a one-page black and white website with no pictures.
Sure, okay.
And I'm in an industry that, you know, is pretty visual.
Sure.
And so I had that for a long time, and it worked for a number of different reasons because of where we were in location and Google Analytics and things like that, and that other people just didn't. And then we had we were on Angie's List when that first came out to the area. We were one of their top providers for a while because we were working for that customer experience.
Sure.
And so early on, I was able to see the power of online reviews that kind of built trust.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a pretty big customer base.
Sure.
And repeat customer base.
Okay.
So they would contact us for ongoing repairs, you know, once or twice a year, if not more.
Oh, nice.
Yep. Yep. And just because we're easy to call, we could turn around. And so we were able to take care of people and they would refer us. And so we had that built up. And then I was able to hire some skilled people and able to take on larger projects. I'd been turning down larger projects for years.
Yeah, because you started off as a handyman, essentially, right? Fixing stuff.
There's only so much you can do with one cordless drill, James, and a Toyota Corolla sedan. So I didn't, you know, I had to build up to the power tools.
So a lot of companies folded during the recession, and you clearly did not.
Right.
So was there some magic pill or something like that that you were following or taking? Or
No, I don't think there's a magic pill. I mean, that was just buckle down, a lot of hard work to make it through there. And I had a lot of people around us that helped us, too. So we had some really great customers that helped us get through there, that stuck with us and hired us. We had employees that were understanding. And we had extremely low cost to start with. And I was in a situation where I didn't have a lot of extra overhead or personal expenses.
Sure.
And was able just to make less money.
Okay.
During that period. And I still enjoyed the work and our customers. And so that made it worthwhile for me.
So when you say your employees were understanding, did you have to dock their pay or anything like that or get rid of them? Or?
No, I think some of the employees we picked up were laid off from other positions. And so they were able to get employment at rates I could afford at the time.
Okay.
We're still within industry standard, but they knew if we had like we were trying to get as many hours as we could that week. I didn't dock their pay and no one got laid off. But there weren't some times where I had them work. I paid to have them work on my own house. So I covered their wages rather than just paying to have them stay home or have them go on unemployment. It was definitely a challenge. And other folks that just hurt more cause they were a larger company than I was at that time. Yep.
So do you think the industry really changed overall from that, or do you think it's recovered?
Oh, absolutely. From that? I mean, recovered in terms of economic activity. Probably there's a lot of more economic activity.
Sure.
But in terms of needing the workforce to perform that, no, we haven't recovered. That's going to be an ongoing problem.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because, you know, a million, like I said, I think before, a million people left the industry, and then it lasted so long, not enough people were coming into it. So sure. The folks that were left over are getting, they have to retire or they need to retire.
Mm-hmm.
And that's become the biggest issue right now is if you as a consumer want to hire someone, you're having more and more limited choices and having to wait longer and projects are taking longer.
Sure.
Yep. And so we're trying to work to solve that by getting more people interested in the industry and providing training and a career path, more specifically in the field as a carpenter. But there's lots of different directions you can go once you enter. I mean, it's a huge... The remodeling and construction industry is huge on commercial, residential, and the remodeling side.
Sure.
Yep.
Because there's so much work, or?
It's such a big number. I think we're probably almost closer. I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but I mean, think automotive industry side of all the other companies that support that by selling tires and all the support things. I mean, so there's designers, there's suppliers, there's window manufacturers, there's the tile installer. It's a big company. So,
You
know, you don't, it's not all everyone swinging the hammer. There's someone that has to sell that project, design it, supply the hammer, supply the equipment. And then there's plumbers related to it.
Sure.
And then all the bookkeeping and other support things. So it's a pretty big industry. There's a lot of different things, project management, that people can do. It can be quite rewarding.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you've seen a lot in the 17 years that you've been around. What are some of the biggest challenges that you've had to deal with?
Oh, one big challenge was when we weren't big enough to have backup redundant people.
Okay.
So it was myself as the only salesperson and manager, and I had one lead carpenter.
Oh.
And then he suddenly got sick and got cancer and had to go off to...
Oh, really sick?
Really sick. Okay. Like, and I had very
not
short...
Not just I have a cold.
Very short notice. And I had worked very hard to build up a backlog of work, and I had sold months of work, like over 4 or 6 months of work. And then I found out within days that he had to leave. And I thought, oh no, now what? So that was very challenging to scramble and try to readjust expectations.
Sure.
Schedules and try to keep things going straight. And luckily it wasn't as short of employees as now.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gone through different iterations of that, having key people suddenly leave because of unexpected things.
Sure.
And that can be a real challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Other challenges we experience. So everyone, you're like, why do I need to buy business insurance? What's this thing that's so expensive I buy every so often?
Right.
What is this really for? Well, and I had thought of all the scenarios that I would have to use business insurance, you know, that would relate from something we did wrong by accident or a subcontractor did or something of that nature, just some accident. But then I got a call one Tuesday night about a fire that our van was involved with.
Oh.
And it turned out it was either no one was injured, which is very fortunate, but our work van with all the equipment was a total loss, and our employee's house that was parked next to ended up being a total loss too.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, it was pretty dramatic.
How long ago was this?
This was a year or two ago now.
And, oh, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty intense. So
chicken egg, was it van burned or house burned?
You know, they don't know exactly. There was all sorts of special insurance investigators.
Sure.
The best thing it came down to, it got subrogated to where we had the vehicle repaired. So the dealership's insurance ended up paying for the van claim and the house claim, probably because it would have been so expensive to fight it in court.
Sure.
So part of the thing was my insurance would have paid for that court fight, which would have been prohibitively expensive for us.
Sure.
And if it would have been deemed the van, my insurance would have paid for my employee's house reconstruction.
Sure.
So very stressful for them. And they had just started. They hadn't even been with us 6 months.
You're kidding.
Yeah, which is very unfortunate. So I felt very fortunate that he stayed with the company. And we did what we could to support them. But it was just very stressful for them and us, even though, I mean, I didn't physically go start the fire, a piece of equipment that we owned and we had been maintaining to our best of ability, in theory, had been a party to this cause. So that was stressful because life goes on.
Right.
You know, all this stuff goes on. So you have this extra thing you weren't planning for.
Right.
And they weren't planning for. It was very time consuming and energy consuming.
Yeah.
So it's pretty stressful.
It's interesting as a business owner, you have all those plates spinning.
That was another plate to
spin. And then somebody tosses you this very, very heavy burning plate.
Yep, it's on fire. It's hot plate.
And you don't get to say, I'll get to that later.
But it showed that our systems that we had in place that we'd worked for and planned for had worked. So it seems like you can try to design and work the systems beforehand and then grow or grow and figure it out as you do. And I've been a little bit more cautious and trying to build the systems and stuff ahead of time and then grow and refine them.
Sure.
So it's less bumpy along the way.
Right.
It's more work. In the front end, you know, in theory of gaining that reward later, but it tends to help out later on when those bumps do happen, and sometimes they can be bigger than others.
Sure.
I mean, for instance, if we had had a warehouse,
right,
where we parked all the vans,
now you get a really bad day.
That would be a horrible day.
Even bigger plate.
Then you know you hope to mitigate those risks.
Sure.
Special types of insurance or dealing with in different ways, but I mean it was definitely stressful for that employee and so we're and his family, and we're happy no one was hurt.
That's crazy.
That was stressful. So it's usually around that sort of thing. I mean, we definitely had upset customers and become more mindful of how to deal with that and help manage those situations and resolve them as best we can. The recession was hard, just trying to sell more, but yeah, there's always challenges.
Nobody gets excited to go on the flat roller coaster, right?
The flat roller coaster. Well, I mean, so I like to have a planned experience and have it, you know, rainbows and sunshine, but sometimes you get a cloudy day and how can you work with it best to move forward and learn from it and go on. Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So you're married.
Yes.
How long have you been married?
11 years now.
Okay. So you've had your business longer than your wife.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm a little unique. It seems like a lot of the small contractors, it's a husband-wife business. Typically, it seems like, although I did meet another couple where a wife's an electrician and the husband is the carpenter.
Oh, nice.
And they work together. And it's pretty cool. I really like it. But more historically, it was like the spouse is answering the phones and doing the bookkeeping while the other person is in the field doing the work. So my wife has not been involved in the business. I started it by myself.
Sure.
And so I always had a bookkeeper doing our books and helping with us that was, on payroll, and someone was not working as an unpaid volunteer, which you can find very often.
Kudos to you for doing that.
There's a lot of spouses or family members that are unpaid volunteers, and that's affecting the price. And so, that was something I actively tried not to do.
And the relationship.
Yeah, and so I've, you know, I joke with folks, it's my KKH plan, keep Kate happy, and I want to stay married, and it can be really easy to end up not married if you don't take care of your spouse in a small business.
No, I can tell you, my dad had his business forever, whatever that was, delivering milk, whatever, and my mom was the paperwork woman, and she was doing paperwork all the time. And they end up getting divorced after 29 years, something like that. And so all of a sudden, he lost his office admin, right? So then it's interesting, the volume of paperwork that was cut that he just didn't do, either because he didn't have time to do it or he just realized that, oh, we don't have to do this.
Right.
That she was doing before that he no longer needed, right? Because essentially he wasn't paying directly for it.
Right, unpaid volunteer.
So, yeah, so it's interesting. I see that all the time when I'm trying to sell calls on call. I'm like, the relationship that you got with your spouse now, there's no way that that's going to last or that there's not some resentment there.
It needs to be sustainable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I was working silly hours, you know, as people do when they start their small business, 80, 100 hours.
Sure.
It's not sustainable from a relationship or a health standpoint.
Right.
It makes it hard to find a wife
if
you work that much because you just have no time or just, you know, be a good partner in a relationship.
Sure.
So, I mean, one of my goals was to make a living but also have a life outside of that.
That's the name of the game, right? The business is so that you can live, not living for the business.
Right.
So I want to talk, shift it a little bit into pricing without talking specific numbers.
Okay.
But you mentioned something earlier about you were priced lower than you should have been and saw all these guys that had their planes and their boats and their cabins and all this kind of stuff. And you struggling to even pay the annual fee.
I didn't have dental insurance or health insurance or retirement or any of those things.
Yeah. So, right. So you had the super dirt cheap low price. I want to know how you came up with that super dirt cheap low price and how you evolved that price. And more importantly, with your clients, the clients that kept with you and
quite easily. I'll tell you that story.
Okay.
So as many people do, if you're working for someone, you're like, well, I'm getting paid this much per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my hourly rate. I could go out and charge a customer and I'll be making X number of dollars.
Sure.
I didn't think about taxes or insurance all the overhead.
Sure.
So that's how I arrived at my first rate when I had worked, you know, construction a summer, I got paid so much per hour.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And I was like, I'll just do this. And I'd actually had insurance at a ridiculously low rate. And so that I started to figure out some of my expenses and raise it, but I still had a very low cost of living.
Okay.
Being in my early 20s.
Sure.
You know,
minus student loans.
Yeah, I had a paid off old car. I lived in a very small efficiency apartment and had very few tools. And then I realized that, you know, I was financing a lot of projects through these really low rates. And so I incrementally started to increase my rates, you know, because I wanted some of those other things like funding a retirement account or possibly having insurance, et cetera. And then so I started to play with those numbers. And as my rates went up, what was really interesting was people looked at me as being more professional. When you have a very low rate, even though I presented in very clean shirts and professional written contracts and all those things, because the rate was so low, they figured something was wrong.
Yep.
So
which it was, it just wasn't with the service or anything.
Right. So
your rate is too low.
I hit a sweet spot. Now we're at a different point. We know our numbers better. But I have a lot more overhead and infrastructure to support everyone. We're still very mindful of our rates and trying to stay competitive, but we're a different company, a business or practice than we were 10 or even 5 years ago.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Absolutely.
So has anybody, previous clients that would refer business to you or ask for more business, did anybody get all excited and say, tell
me? We definitely have that experience. One of my first real clients that wasn't someone we knew directly, she is still with us, and she's great. I mean, just wonderful person that's been very supportive and helped us make it through some really tough times by giving us some work.
Oh, nice.
And we've changed rates with her, and she's just appreciated our business and that we have professional people and has stuck with us. And some people don't use us for certain things because our rates have changed.
Sure.
But we've been able to advertise more and get the right customers that fit our business. And be able to, so we can keep going and be there for them to take care of them later rather than at a lower rate and go out of business and not take care of anything if there's a service issue later.
Gotcha. Fair.
Absolutely. Yep.
So you raised an interesting point. Perfect segue.
Sure.
Tell me about advertising and marketing. What's been successful for you?
There's no one thing.
Okay.
And it's changed with our budget. So when we didn't have a lot of money, our existing customers were our best advertising, asking for referrals, and having them, you know, talk to their friends. And so we can work with like-minded people that might have similar budgets. And then, you know, being online helped us very early because when we started, that wasn't a big thing.
Sure.
And then what's been really big right now is reviews online.
Online,
It's a trust factor.
Right.
And then we had some different clients that were more well-known in the area that built some trust. Our biggest thing is building trust with people. And so they come back to us too. And now I have an advertising company that helps us. I used to try to do all our advertising in-house, but it was a whole nother project and I was not an expert in the area. So I was just throwing money at the wall and see what stuck, and that was not productive or efficient. And so I was able to grow enough where I could hire someone to help us with those things.
Sure.
So I wasn't trying to manage our social media and our website and, you know, do different mailers or advertising buys or things like that.
Right.
So we've developed a program over the years kind of based on what our budget is and what will have the most impact.
Okay.
You know, spending the most we can on what will have the biggest impact in our area. And every market's a little different about what works. But by far, I mean, our existing customers are our biggest referral. Our trade partners refer work to us too.
Nice.
Yep. Yep. So that's, you know, we're looking to pass work back and forth.
Sure.
So rather than bringing a plumber and a painter in house, why don't I work with companies where we could share leads back and forth and take mm-hmm. care of customers that are like-minded?
Mm-hmm.
And then that helps out their customers. It helps out us.
Sure.
It's great for our employees. It's a win-win.
Sure.
Yep.
So do you have to do a whole lot of sales anymore? Does the yep. advertise? You do. Okay.
Yep. Yep. So I'm still doing over half the sales.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
And I mean, eventually, if we can work up our sales, our production workforce, we can hire more salespeople, and then sure. I can step out of that role. But I'm still out there meeting customers and helping them solve their solutions and telling them where we'll be and seeing if we'll be a right fit.
Sure.
Yeah.
So when people, this is one of the things I want to figure out how to tactfully ask you.
Sure.
When people, I imagine with all construction companies, especially if they're getting 5 bids or 20 bids or whatever.
Whatever they're doing.
It blows yeah. my mind. when people say no to you, do you see a common denominator?
No.
Or is it?
It depends. It could be typically what we're trying to bring up right away is price range or your budget range.
Sure.
And timeline.
Mm.
And if the timeline's a fit, then let's talk about budget.
Mm-hmm.
And if the budget's not a fit, let's talk about, you know, what are your real goals with the project? Maybe right. there's a different solution that might cost less money. And here mm-hmm. are all the possible solutions we can offer.
Sure.
And if we seem like a good fit, what's the best direction to go forward to mm-hmm. achieve that? So, I mean, those would be usually those are the biggest thing is timeline and budget. Because if we just can't meet your timeline and have a predictable experience that we can deliver at the quality we want to do, it won't work.
Right.
For whatever reason. So, yeah.
Gotcha.
It's trying to find the right people that fit into that with us.
Yep. That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. What has been your favorite thing about owning a business so far?
Favorite thing. It's changed. Now it's more opportunity to provide places for our team members, our employees to grow and develop.
Super cool.
You know, before it was I was learning new things.
Sure.
And learning about the industry and mm-hmm. learning a lot of business stuff. And so now that's, you know, and providing a good service for our customers and seeing that we can take care of them this long. It's neat that if you've been doing it this long, like we put together the baby crib,
mm-hmm.
you know, 17 years ago. And now let's say we're doing the addition and that person is graduating high school. It's crazy. Sure.
That's, you know, awesome.
To be with the family that long or sure. see that experience. Yeah.
Right.
A lot of changes.
That's super cool.
Yeah. So it's pretty neat to be able to be, I mean, we're in people's lives and it's, right. it's neat to be part of that.
Sure.
Yep.
What is your least favorite thing about owning a business?
Least favorite thing. I don't know. I don't think I have one right now.
Okay.
I mean, I don't feel, some people feel a lot of pressure by taking care of everyone. I don't have that. I guess it's, I don't have a good answer for that, James.
That's fair. Yeah. That's totally fair. You don't have to have an answer for everyone. Half of success is showing up, right? I just had 2 interviews today and for receptionists for sure. calls on call. One showed up, the other one didn't.
It happens.
So it's kind of like, well, if you show up, that's half the battle, right?
It helps.
What is the most expensive mistake that you've made in business?
Oh, I think the best quote I had was from Jim Hirsch. He said, this was the most expensive Ivy League education I've paid for many times over being self-employed. And he's right. I can't think of the most expensive one off the top of my head, but we've had a lot. I mean, it's very easy to miss on an estimate, and then rather than going back, we just do it, you know, ask for more. So
that you got to tell me about that, because this is one thing that I just do not understand.
Sure.
I'm looking at, I guess Sun Prairie just passed that referendum for the high school and all that jazz of a lot of money, whatever. And I'm thinking somebody has to sit down at a computer or a paper or whatever
right.
and figure out how many screws and how many pounds of concrete
Absolutely.
And all the jazz are going in here.
Yeah.
And a home remodeling job is the same, just on a somewhat lower scale. But I'm thinking, you don't know what's behind that drywall.
You make an educated guess. So we're trying to set that up for everyone for success. Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, it's super easy. Like, what if you miss that whole load of lumber from your estimate or move a
right.
decimal point?
Right.
Or you don't have really easy systems or your multipliers off.
Yeah.
That could have pretty large implications.
And I think just right. you mentioned weather earlier.
Oh,
so
yeah.
you got
Delays.
You're doing a siding job or something like that.
It is not for the faint of heart.
Yeah. I would bet that there's got to be either some leeway plus or minus, or there has to be some understanding customers that are like,
we just try to set those expectations about how long it's going to take and based on history. So,
okay.
I mean, it was a lot more scary, I guess, when you first do it, and
sure.
it gets easier and easier.
Okay.
Or you're able to manage that expectations easier, I should say.
I imagine it was probably easier to do estimates for the handyman work because you're like, hey, this is me, and this is me doing a job that's going to be an hour or two or whatever.
That was interesting because I always used to do time and materials, and we really switched during the recession because people's expectations changed.
Okay.
And by doing fixed price bids, then it was really clear what was going to be at the beginning and the end.
Mm.
And so there wasn't, because our customers really needed that. And other people weren't used to doing it that way.
Sure. Also, where before you were doing time and materials, where you're just like, whatever time it takes is what we'll charge you?
And I was charging so little, the risk for them was pretty low.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, it was shared.
Sure.
And so as we charge more, the risk gets bigger.
Right.
If it gets an hour or two over.
Sure.
If you have a very specific tight budget. So, yeah, we went to fixed price bidding. And so we ended up building up our own internal labor library.
Gotcha. Okay.
I tried to use price books and things like that. They just didn't fit for what we were doing in our production and style.
Sure.
No, it's very time consuming the way we do it, but it ends up with a more predictable product.
Okay. Price. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I always think a kitchen remodel, even if you're 2 days off of your timeline, 2 days times, let's say, three dudes full time,
it adds up.
That could be thousands of dollars.
Your profit could be gone for this huge project that you put all this time and energy in.
Right.
It could be eroded so quickly.
So, and then I think, oh my gosh, even on commercial scale, it's going to be multiplied even dramatically more so. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So, what are some of the favorite things that you've learned since you started your business?
That I've learned. You know, surrounding yourself with people that can help you, that makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
Being open-minded. I mean, it's definitely challenged myself. That's been interesting. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't an outgoing person, so sales wasn't natural for me.
Oh.
So think engineer.
Sure.
Turns into salesperson.
Sure.
Not always the best fit.
Not ideal.
And somehow I've been able to muddle through it.
All right. Did you get training or did you just
I've gone through some different
force yourself
or? Force myself. I mean, it was the recession really forced it, like wow, this needs to work. How do we figure this out?
Are you hungry?
Yeah, you know, how do we keep the power on?
Sure.
So yeah, that's been it's been a good challenge for myself. I lost track of the question you asked me. What do I like about
what have you learned?
What have I learned? So many things, too many things to list in a minute, James. Okay.
Let's say top three.
The business side of it, that's been super interesting for me. I really like that. Learning how to motivate people and create environments and systems where they can succeed.
Mm.
That's been great.
Specifically employees?
Yeah, and subcontractors. And, and by nature of that, our customers.
Sure.
So they have a better experience.
Right.
And the building science part of it really interests me too.
Okay.
So we can build durable things that will last a long time and perform the way you want to.
Interesting.
So if I can have a product that you're comfortable and is going to last a long time and I can have employees that can succeed in a safe way.
Sure.
And now we're trying to create ways for them to be able to enter the industry and have a great career path. That makes me happy.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
You ready to switch careers, James?
Almost. No.
Come on. It's a paid workout, James.
No, I can totally appreciate that. I can totally appreciate that. I tell you, I applied for a job as a construction guy. I don't know. I was probably 20-something. And I thought it was going to be a shoe-in, but it was just like one of those, it was this weird thing. I'm trying to think when that would have been, 2002, 2003, something like that.
Sure.
Ballpark. Anyways, I answered this. It was probably a newspaper ad.
Yep.
And it says, show up to this address. I show up to this address, and it's a house that's in the process of being built.
Yep.
And there's just a guy in the truck that you're supposed to walk up to and say, hey. And it just seemed like the dumbest guy in the world in this truck. So I'm like, oh, this is going to be easy, right?
Right.
I'm super smart. And he gives me this piece of paper to fill out. And it's all these math equations with fractions.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was like, oh, okay, no big deal. So I fill this thing out and I hand it to him. And that was the end of the story.
Interesting.
I never heard back from the guy.
That was it.
And I couldn't even tell you what business he was with. I didn't care.
Huh?
It was one of those just like, I need a job. Construction's a job.
There was a lot of places like that. We're fixing a lot of those houses.
I do not doubt that.
There's a lot of job security from the housing boom. Yep.
No, and I remember looking around at the crowd and I'm thinking, I don't even know if these guys know the alphabet.
Yeah.
A lot of them. And when I drove the concrete truck, there were people that, they were so, the culture of that industry. This is specific with concrete.
They can be a little intense.
Yeah, and after I got some concrete stuck in a chute and I had to climb up and push it out,
yeah.
I'm like, I get why you guys are cranky. This right. is heavy stuff.
Right, if it goes bad, it goes bad fast.
Yeah.
And in a big way.
Yeah, so
right.
I can kind of justify it, but I couldn't see living my life that way. Just living with just getting yelled at all the time.
Yeah. So residential remodeling, less yelling.
Yeah. Okay.
Typically, someone's getting removed from the job site if that's happening.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a typical thing. And this was pre-recession. So
correct. I mean, this was a while ago. The industry's changed a little
sure.
bit. But yeah, we're looking to have a definitely more professional.
Well, you almost have to.
Family-friendly job site. Yeah.
Yeah. You almost have to. If you want... other people, other employees to come on.
And customers.
Yeah, and customers.
It really
people
helps.
People to pay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The culture of the construction industry, from what I've seen, just the communication has been challenging at best.
Yep.
From a lot of the companies that I've seen.
We even did some in-house training where we brought someone in to do, I mean, there's all sorts of different personality profile things. We just picked DISC because they had a good trainer.
Sure.
And so we had everyone, even the field carpenters, do an evaluation.
Oh, interesting.
And they got to see with their coworkers
sure.
how they best communicate in difficult situations and kind of where they fall in different profiles
sure.
as a training tool. And that was really interesting to a lot of folks.
Sure.
And we also did some training in how to deal with difficult situations, like with a customer if they mm-hmm. were upset, which is can definitely happen during a remodel.
Yeah.
The most even-minded person can lose it if you have something.
It's a stressful time.
Super stressful, and there could be an outside factor affecting it as well
sure.
that you might not know about.
Right.
Because you're in their house and creating stress.
Right.
And so that was really useful for them, and that helped with the communication too.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, it's
yep.
commendable what you've done in regards to communication specifically and keeping the customer experience in mind. Because I used to joke with some of these contractors that I would talk to. I'm like, you know what, people? Watch these home remodeling shows that they're do-it-yourselfers.
Oh, yeah.
Because they tried to call 20 construction companies, and either none of them answered the phone, or when the guys showed up, they were all beat up, half drunk, and not nice.
Right. And so that's still a legitimate, I guess, kind of black eye for the construction industry. A lot of people have that perception.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're working actively to avoid that.
Sure.
And, you know, setting up with our internally of when we're expecting how soon for people to call back, how often to communicate.
Sure.
In what form. And not everyone, you might be super skilled with the hammer and math, but maybe you're not the best writer.
Sure.
And so there's some leeway there. You don't have to write the most beautiful emails or text messages, but just keep people informed
right.
and set those expectations, because we don't want to be the person that doesn't call back or doesn't show up.
Right.
You know, or you can't get a phone call into. Because,
mm-hmm.
Again, people are getting even a heightened nervousness.
Right.
You know, or saying, hey, there is an issue. We're going to come up with the solutions in some way for you.
So, right. Yep. There's a huge trust factor there as well, right?
Absolutely. So we're definitely trying to build trust. Because we're putting so much time and energy into building that project or that relationship
right.
that we want to keep it there. So you're going to call us back and hopefully refer us in the future.
Right. And you're going to be in their house remodeling their kitchen or bathroom. They're sticking huge money into something like that.
Typically, folks' most valuable asset is their house.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're allowing us the opportunity to work on it. So we want
yeah.
to take care of it.
So they got to pay you and let you be in their house at
yeah.
7, 6 in the morning, 8 in the morning, whatever it is.
Usually about 7:30 on, yeah.
But
not
I mean,
6, yeah.
trusting you to,
yep.
to be there while they're gone, right?
Yeah.
You
yep.
go ahead, take apart my house. I'm going to go to work and hopefully pay for this thing.
Right. We're hanging out with your usually pet that's, you know, not really thrilled that we're there
sure.
making noise, some noise either. So working really hard to be clean, too, and not leave a mess.
Sure.
So we're doing a lot of things, and that's good for worker safety as
mm-hmm.
well, staying clean,
oh, I bet.
Keeping the dust down.
I bet.
Yep. So we invested a lot of money into dust reduction equipment and safety
gear. Really?
Yes, like big $1,500 air scrubbers.
Oh, wow.
Powered air purifier.
Sure.
Respirators. There's another $1,500. So $3,000 just in stuff to clean air, plus all the fancy equipment that keeps down dust and the lead safe
sure.
vacuums and things like that.
Wow.
Yeah, for like one little tiny bathroom or a kitchen.
Right.
Yeah.
And your competition, not all of your competition is doing that.
Not everyone's doing that.
In fact, you could probably argue that most aren't, I would guess.
I don't know. You know, we're members of NARA. A lot of the NARA contractors are really, there's some good competition there. They do some good best practices. I don't know exactly what everyone's doing, but,
sure.
you know, we're making a concerted effort to really keep things as tidy as possible.
Sure.
And,
That's fair.
Professional as possible.
That's fair.
Train people on our team so they can do those things that way.
All right.
Yeah.
So I want to mention or just talk to you really quick about this while we're running out of time here.
Sure.
Tell me about your car.
Oh, so I broke my old car trying to fix it myself.
Okay.
It was oil car and then that runs on gas, a Toyota Matrix.
Sure.
Loved it. Hatchback, could fit everything in there.
Right.
Kind of on plan that I broke it, and I had been looking at electric cars for quite a while and put them off because they didn't have the range I needed.
Sure.
And then this Chevy Bolt with a B came out,
mm-hmm.
and I just pulled the trigger. It had a severe action. It has no oil or gas-powered parts at all. It's 100% battery.
Yeah.
And it's been great. It's been a lot of fun. Very quiet. The maintenance is phenomenal. I just rotate tires.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot more power than I was ever used to. And I don't have to worry about cracking my engine block, replacing an oil pressure sensor again, rusty tailpipes or things like that. So it's been great fun.
Even oil changes, right?
There's no oil changes on it. I think the only thing after 100,000 miles, they said there's some coolant that heats and cools the battery pack and things like that you might want to switch out.
Sure.
So it's been a lot of fun. I even took it up to Ashland, Wisconsin and charged twice between there, but it's been really convenient. I just plug it in at night. I don't go to the gas station anymore unless I want some peanut M&Ms.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So kudos to that. But that you have more vehicles than that for your
business. Yeah. Yep. Definitely more vehicles than that. That's just the run around town estimate vehicle.
Sure. Where you don't need to carry all your tools or your one drill, right?
I got my drill and my little ladder in there and stuff like that, but sure. It's just for more investigation type things.
Gotcha. Yep. Awesome.
Absolutely.
Well, Tony, this has been a pleasure. I got to give you super high kudos for being one of the smartest, most intelligent, most easy to talk to construction people that I've ever. I mean that with all sincerity. I don't know if you know how many construction companies that I've had to work with over the years.
Sure.
That I just had to roll my eyes without rolling my eyes.
No, I appreciate being on, James. It's been fun.
Cool. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggles, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com. As well as Draw-In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business. On the web at drawincustomers.com. And, of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us. Available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our wonderful guest, Tony Trapp of Tony Trapp Remodeling. Tony, I forgot to ask you about your website.
www.tonytrappllc.com.
That's Trap with two P's, correct?
Trap with two P's.
TonyTrappLLC.com, Trap with two P's. Awesome. Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunprairiemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link, found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome, and if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.